With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Rick Mon is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You better believe it. You better believe it. I'm locked and loaded. It's Monday, the 3rd of October. What a show it's been, eh? Bish, bash, bosh. Bish, bash, bosh. And a little bit more bish, bash, bosh before I get off the air at the top of this show. Wow. We have not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but six. Six guests on the show today because that's how we roll. Bish, bash, bosh. Maybe that's going to be our new mantra. I don't know. What a show it's been. Sonia Bailey hopped on. We've had Jeremy Beck on. We've had Tim Price on. We've had James Freeman on. We're going to have Jesse Zurwill on. And my old chum, who I'm very happy to see on a Monday, not a Tuesday, as well as is Mr. Darren Janner, a.k.a. Darren of Plymouth. He's waiting to jump on the mic to discuss something very interesting indeed once I get finished with my little rant here at the top of the hour. And by the way, I forgot to mention, I have my very own email address. Yes, rickmunn@tntradio.live. Feel free to message me. Feel free to insult me. Feel free to donate huge amounts of money to me. Feel free to show me some love. Do whatever you want, but get in contact with me. And I do read the emails and I will reply to them. And I do incorporate parts of them into the show. So if you're moved, good or bad, let me know about it. rickmunn@tntradio.live. What's going on in the world right now? Well, a lot's going on in the world right now. Steve Barker, MP in the UK, has put out a little meme, Growing Our Economy, it's called, and this is what it says. We need to get the economy growing. We need to reduce energy bills. We need to cut taxes. We need to deliver better infrastructure. We need to manage the economy responsibly. Call me old-fashioned, call me simplistic, but that's the sort of thing, you know, a child could come up with. It's basic common sense. The unfortunate thing is the Tory government are doing none of that. No, they're tanking the economy. They're wrecking people. They're destroying. They're like bulls in a china shop. And they're getting reined in this week. Kwasi's done a U-turn. Liz is going to throw him under a bus. The IMF are getting involved after a week of the mini budget being unleashed. Whew. I wouldn't want to be Kwasi Kwarteng right now. Or as some people have said, you know, he was on the front page of the Mirror the other day and they had some other dude on and said, this is this chant. It's like, no, it's not me. I'm surprised they didn't have Gary Lineker on there because he identifies as a black man right now. Anything's possible these days. Woo! Sweden calls a halt to COVID vaccination for healthy children. About bloody time. It should never have been implemented in the first place. Joining in with Denmark, who's abolished it for anybody under 50. When will the penny drop across the world? How many kids have to die and be injured before these thugs are jailed? Or worse, let me just say, Germany. Up to 15,000 German stores are facing bankruptcy. Like now. Due to soaring energy costs. Germany got the short end of the wedge when it came to Ukraine, Russia, because unfortunately Germany are highly dependent on Russian gas, coal and energy, period, to keep the lights on. And as far back as May this year, their chancellor advised Germans to buy extra jumpers because it's going to be a cold winter and invest in candles. Not the sort of thing you want to hear in the year 2022. Maybe in the year 1620 or the year 1483, if someone told you to wrap up warm and buy a candle, that would have fitted back then, medieval times. But this is 2022, and Germans, I'm afraid, you're going to be cold this winter, thanks to your government. Mm-hmm. UK's Truss is pressured to abandon tax cut for the rich, which has happened or is about to happen, and throws Kwarteng under the bus after a revolt. There's a good article on a website called zerohedge.com. If you're on Twitter, I encourage you to follow Zero Hedge @Zero Hedge. really good in-depth breakdowns on all things economical and financial and geopolitical. Somewhere I go to harvest my information, because deep down I'm just an old plagiarist. I just take what work other people have done and I talk about it and I expand on it, but I give them the credit. ZeroHedge.com. Okay. Whew. We need to pause and reflect, maybe have a moment of meditation and prayer if that's your thing. I have to inform you that we have a website, tntradio.live. We've got a shop on there. You can buy TNT Radio socks, for crying out loud. What more could you want for Christmas? Buy a pair for your dear old dad, your grandmother, your grandfather, your aunt, your uncle, your next door neighbor, whoever you like, your worst enemy. Get them some TNT socks for Christmas. Support the effort, because we're trying to connect people with the truth. We're trying to wake people up. We're trying to prevent them from going into the abyss here on TNT Radio.
News you need to start your day.
Updated first thing in the morning.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Darren Janner is in the house, and it's not a Tuesday. He'll be back tomorrow, by the way, but it's a Monday. I'm very happy to see you. And welcome, welcome, welcome to TNT Radio. He's now in the books. He's our ideological subversion propaganda minister for TNT Radio. Darren, welcome. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well, and that's a title I'm very, very proud of. I've worked really, really hard over the last 20 years as a conspiracy theorist to get to this place, so job done. I'm going to be appearing on your show at 12 o'clock every day this week for 10 minutes just to discuss a sort of current, maybe a headline news story or something that's important that maybe is being reported in the wrong way or not being reported at all in the mainstream. So the news story that I picked up for you today, and it's quite relevant to your editorial, is that Liz Truss is reportedly, and this has been reported by the BBC and the Telegraph and the Independent and the Guardian, the usual suspects, has reportedly told King Charles to abandon his plans to attend COP27 next month in Egypt, which is quite strange in that, one, our prime minister has just told the new king he can't go somewhere, and the new king has said, no, I'm not going to go there after being instructed to do that. COP27, if people don't know, if they don't remember COP26, this is when all the richest people, the most powerful people, organizations, philanthropists, money givers, donors, they all get on their private jets and fly to a really luxurious location. This be Egypt, pretty hot there, I expect, in the summer. And they discuss how they can make us all poorer to save the climate. So Charles wanted to give a speech at the conference in Egypt, but his plans have been put on ice by Mrs. Truss after she intervened. He had to think very carefully about what steps to take for his overseas tour, and he is not going to be attending COP27, said a royal source. The decision was made entirely in the spirit of being ever mindful as king that he acts on government advice. Now, I could continue go listening to the spiel, the going backwards and forwards. Oh, it wasn't the king's decision. It was the king's decision. The result is he is not going. And he is almost number two in the Great Reset, as far as I can tell. He's right up there with Klaus Schwab. They're holding hands on this project. In fact, I believe he may have even named it the Great Reset himself. So this comes from the king, a term I'm still trying to get used to. So used to saying the queen. And it coincides. It actually coincides with these U-turns on government taxes that Liz Truss is making today. And you have to ask the question, are governments in UK and elsewhere now starting to get really, really twitchy about public sentiment to the agendas and the policies, particularly relating to climate change and COVID, that they're putting in place? Do they realize now, hey, do you think the king going to this jet setter's paradise to tell all the poor people that they need to become poorer is a good move when they're now the average person in the UK is paying 2.5 grand a year for their energy bills? So I don't know what you think about that, Rick.
Do you know, as you're talking, I'm seeing a circle, right? As you talk, sometimes I get funny pictures in my head. That's the way you and I are. We kind of provoke each other to think about strange things. So as you're talking and describing this scenario, I'm seeing a circle. It's a weird one, all right? You've seen those old pictures of a snake swallowing its own tail. It's like never-ending circle, right? Check this out. So we have Liz Truss telling the king not to go to COP26. But you have the king, who's in bed, effectively, with Klaus Schwab and the WEF, who control the IMF, who have told Kwasi Kwarteng and Liz Truss to rein their necks in concerning the budget. And then you have that prime minister poking Charles in the chest and saying you can't go to COP26. Yeah. It's this weird kind of circle of control going on. It's like she can tell him not to go to Egypt, but he can tell the IMF to tell her to reverse the effects of the budget, but then she tells him not to go to It's bizarre, my friend. It is completely bizarre. And I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to take a scalpel to Prince Charles and say, okay, you see all that influence with the WEF, you need to keep stum. You need to withdraw from the stage, not be such a figurehead. By all means, still continue to do your little dance with Klaus, but don't be so verbal about it. And effectively, I think they're saying that could be bad for business if you're the king and an overt globalist. Yeah. We need to differentiate you, split you in half, and keep it going, Charlie, but do it on the QT. Is that not what's happening?
Yeah, quite likely, and it's almost hitting two birds with one stone, because the royal family are going to say, oh, like they did with Andrew. Andrew's not a pedo rapist and didn't go to the Epstein's Island and all the rest of it. They'll just sort of sweep him under the carpet. You can stay down, Andrew, and hopefully it'll all blow over. And then maybe they're doing the same with Charles, because one of the major sort of counter narratives when the Queen died and he's being installed onto the throne was that he's incredibly influenced, or maybe influencing, the World Economic Forum. At the same time, we've got Liz Truss, World Economic Forum, Kwasi, whatever his name is, the Chancellor of the
Kwarteng.
The Kwarteng. Yeah. He's WEF. And they're probably all going, hey, all this stuff that I think the public are onto us. We need to try and put some distance there between us. And at the same time, Charles won't be standing on a podium berating his own people, his subjects, about how they're bad for the environment and they're polluting the environment and carbon dioxide and the usual stream of nonsense that comes out of these COP meetings. There was a couple of other interesting points. I just point out that Charles is a prominent campaigner. This is BBC. And his interest ranges from tropical forests to farming practice, sustainable farming practices, and water security. And as soon as I see the water security, I'm like, oh, man, I'll think about Nestle. Then I'll think about how much rain there is and how much water there is in the ocean. You know, down the line, at the moment, they're attacking farms, farming practices, and food. Sooner or later, we're going to get to a point where water is going to be a tool that's going to be used against us, taxed, rationed, used as a weapon in war, used as a weapon or a cause for war, you know, resource battles in the future. So I saw that water security and that stood out. And also in his first speech as king, Charles indicated he would pass on his climate campaign to his son, Prince William. With Catherine beside him, he said, with Catherine beside him, our new prince and princess of Wales will, I know, continue to inspire and lead our national conversations, helping to bring the material to the center ground where vital help can be given. So this is a family thing. It's not his son, Charles's father before him, who said, I want to return to Earth reincarnated as a deadly virus to solve, you know, climate change and to solve the population problem. So this is a long ongoing lineage and a long-term agenda that's being passed from father to son, and obviously to William will be passing this on to his son. So expect more of this, not just in the immediate 5 years, forever.
Harry's not in the equation then, I take it. But then again, you know, question marks are there over when you say he's passing it on to his son. Yeah, William would be the likely candidate because, you know, Harry's got that big shock of ginger hair, like Captain What's-His-Face. Yeah. But we're not going to go down, we're not going to get down that rabbit hole. So, yeah, Harry and Meghan.
Accidents happen, man.
What's that?
You only need a plane crash and Harry could be soon could soon be in charge with Meghan by his side instead of Catherine.
All joking aside, my friend, at this point, I rule nothing out. If you were to tell me Harry will be the King of England by the end of the year and Meghan will be in Buckingham Palace, I wouldn't put money on against it happening. I don't think it's going to happen, but anything is possible at this time. So that's an interesting article, which I dare say will develop further when COP27 actually comes about, which is being held in Egypt. Darren, I appreciate you hopping on and throwing your tuppence into the cap concerning that article. All being well, I'll catch up with you tomorrow morning as normal. That's Mr. Darren Jenner, and welcome to the TNT fold. We've got to take a short break. When we come back, I'll be talking to my old comrade, Jesse Zurowell from New Jersey. Don't go away. This is Locked and Loaded TNT Radio. We'll be right back.
TNT Radio's Trish Wood.
I will tell you now exactly what I found out in my looking at this. That this is a size Z breast prosthetic. It is comical. It is ludicrous. It has no place in a school. It is absolutely, in my humble opinion, fetish gear. But because it's going into the school under the guise of a trans person, so he claims to be, no one ever is able to kind of diagnose this. They just make the claim. I suspect that he's a cross-dresser with a fetish, but what do I know? And so he's going into the shop class where he teaches, I think grade 9, with this. I mean, it's enormous. You can't even believe how big it is. It's pornographic. Here's how pornographic it is. The company that sells it, it's a company called Dokia, D-O-K-I-A. In their video sales pitch for it that runs on YouTube, they actually have a warning. Right? Like you can't watch this video. It may be upsetting to some people or one of those things, right? It's a censorship warning before you click on this. So it's fine for the people selling it to say that. God bless them for doing it. Yet the kids at Oakville Trafalgar have to confront this every day they're in that person's class. It is ridiculous.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing. We can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
In 2018, 2.9 million people died of the flu and pneumonia. In 2020, there was a 98% decline in influenza, but 2.8 million die of COVID. Data never lies. We mandate that the truth be told. TNT Radio.
Okay, it is the last little section of Locked and Loaded today, Monday, 3rd of October, 2022. Had a really good show. This is now my sixth guest of the day, Mr. Jesse Zurowell. We are, how would you say? Yeah, we're experimenting with the format, I think, for the better. We have some producers hopping on, dealing with some current news items, as well as the editorials, as well as the specialist guests that we have on here. I think it's very important to do that, and that's what we're doing from today forward. At least I'm trying to do my best. I've had Darren of Plymouth. I've had Tim Price. I've had Sonia Bailey. I've had Jeremy Beck. I've had, So many people I can't even keep up with them. But now I have my old chum, Mr. Jesse Zerwell, who, by the way, gets an extra 15 to 20 minutes in his bed on a Monday morning now on virtue of this new formatting. Jesse, how are you, my friend? Are you well?
I am doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I always notice your location, by the way, and I'm noticing something today. There maybe has been a drawing in of the light. The last few times you've been on, it's been like sunlight streaming in through your window. Now it looks like it could be a little bit darker. You've got a light on in there. Is there a changing in the times or the seasons drawing in New Jersey for you?
Well, it's certainly autumn, and yesterday and today have been quite dismal. Saturday was dismal too. So there's not much light coming in from outside. Hence why it looks dim.
Dismal. Dismal. Well, I'm the same. You know, I think we're on the same, almost the same, what is it, longitude or latitude or whatever. If you were to draw a line from my house, it would probably connect with your house on the old global map. That's assuming you believe in global. It's not flat or triangular, but we're not going to get into that. But yeah, I'm feeling the dismal vibes myself. It's a little bit overcast, drizzly. Yeah, autumn's here, but I do like autumn. It's a season of death and dying. I should hate it, but I'm sorry to say, I kind of like it. It's my favorite season. What do you think about autumn?
I'm a fan until it gets into late autumn and much colder here. And of course, on the cusp of winter, which I don't like so much anymore as an adult. As a kid, I didn't mind it. But now, as a grown man, it's not something I look forward to.
No, especially not under the current climate, no pun intended, political climate and energy type climate that I'm talking about. I want to look at that with you today. There's a few things I want to cover off with you. There's been a lot of developments in Ukraine over the last week or so, especially with you know, the Donbas region, with people wanting to be termed Russian citizens. There's talk of escalation. Putin's losing the war, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Who'd done it? Was it Putin? Was it the West? Who did it? So many things to cover. Before we get into that, very, very briefly, just leading up to the news, I talked earlier on with a gentleman who highlighted a lot of political, how would you say, political terrorism that's going on following Biden's Philadelphia speech, where he talked about MAGA being extremists and authoritarians and the Republicans were bad. We're coming up to the midterms in America. I believe they're going to be held in the month of November. What is the word on the street? What is the vibe in general from the, and not so much from the media perspective, but how are people feeling coming into those midterms? Are they actually going to keep voting for the Democrats, or will there be a genuine landslide in favor of the Republican Party?
Well, if I'm just going by what I hear on the street, I don't hear anything. It doesn't seem like
maybe you're not the right person to ask.
It doesn't seem like people where I live, which is a fairly working class neighborhood in New Jersey, not far from New York City, are that concerned with the midterms. And I think that's not because they are ignorant of what's going on or because they don't care what's going on, but because they are smart, practical people who see through the nonsense of the charade of electoral politics. But if I'm going to go by my own research, it seems like there's going to be a Republican landslide. Things seem to be pointing in that direction, but one never knows with electoral politics because it's a rigged game and that rigging can go in either direction anytime, despite what the so-called will of the people is. Related to that, I think, though, we're going to see here and perhaps elsewhere in the world a ramping up of authoritarianism, of emergencies in inverted commas, and strategies of tension by which I mean acts or violent acts, whether actual or staged, carried out to mm-hmm. pit the supposed opposing sides, left and right, a false binary, but to pit those opposing sides against each other. Because there's so much going on with regard to the economy, geopolitically, the COVID-19 scam that's continuing staggeringly 2.5 years into it, almost 3 years, if we're going to start it from late 2019. There's so much going on in those regards that I suspect there are going to be serious moves made, certainly by the nation state governments, certainly by this one, but moves dictated from on high, from their masters on high, to again stoke tension and expand and consolidate authoritarianism, to restructure what needs to be structured, particularly with regard to monetary policy and the international monetary and financial system, which is something I talked about with Fabio Vigi on my program last Friday. So if anybody's interested in what that whole picture might look like, do check out that conversation.
Yeah, Fabio Vigi is a great guy, by the way. He's a professor of critical theory and Italian at Cardiff University in the UK. And if you did miss that episode, check out the website, tntradio.live, and search for, go under Jesse Zurawell. And there's a full back catalogue of all the interviews that he's carried out, all the shows that he's done on the Perspective Show, which, by the way, airs Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. UK time. Please check that out. Jesse has his own show here on TNT, but he's been with me as a valued guest and a good friend right from day one since I started here on TNT Radio, and all being well, that will continue for the foreseeable future. We have to take a quick break, Jesse, just for literally 30 seconds. We're going to hear some news, and when we come back, I want to zone in on Ukraine. That's something that you're extremely knowledgeable about, and dare I say, you have some Ukrainian blood flowing through your veins too. You have family coming from over there too, so you've always kept a close eye on the situation there. I want to get your thoughts and opinions about some of the developments there and the way things are going in that part of the world when we come back after the news here on TNT Radio.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. The death toll from Hurricane Ian has climbed above 80, and there are fears it'll continue rising as hundreds of people remain unaccounted for. Russia's parliament will vote to formally annex 4 Ukrainian regions on Monday after President Putin signed off on their accession to the Russian Federation. And over 100 people have been killed at a soccer match in Indonesia after police fired tear gas on rioting fans, triggering one of the world's deadliest stadium disasters.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Okay, Jesse, with all the stuff that's going on in the world, people would be forgiven for taking their eye off certain balls that they've maybe been following or keeping an eye on, you know, from the start of this year. There's so much economic turmoil, there's electoral turmoil, there's cost of living turmoil, there's disastrous events happening weather-wise. We obviously have had the ongoing situation in Ukraine happening since February of this year. The narrative is very much from the mainstream media, of course, that Putin is losing. He's losing ground. He's getting desperate. He's trying to grab pieces of land. He's blowing up the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. That's what we're being fed, or at least most of the people around us are being fed. The reality of the situation is somehow different than that. Give us a little bit of a breakdown of what's been happening in Ukraine over the last week, especially in regards to the referendum that happened there. The feeling of the people, generally, the consensus seems to be they're happy to be deemed to be part of Russia rather than to be part of Ukraine going forward. But of course, that's being set up as a fake referendum and fake reporting and fake vote counting, etc., by, you know, Putin's regime. What's going on over there?
So, referenda did happen in Donbass, in Kherson, and Zaporozhye. In Donbass, Russia has full control of Donetsk. It only partially controls Luhansk. It fully controls Kherson and partially controls Zaporozhye. I believe I have that right. So two out of the four regions that have joined Russia have reportedly voted to join Russia are not under full Russian control, but these referenda were held. And of course, Western corporate media is calling the referenda shams, to be expected. But if you look at Russian state media, it's the complete opposite. All was carried out to perfection, and there's nothing to criticize. And the will of the people was seen to. Now, that very well may be, but I think we need to question how in 4 days, millions of people were mobilized to vote and vote in such a way that the turnout in all four regions, but especially in Donetsk and Luhansk, almost 99% of the population there, or the voting population there, voted to join Russia. And slightly less in Kherson and Zaporozhye. Maybe those numbers are true. I don't know. But I question the logistics of all of that. And I question the motive of Russia in holding these referenda now. Is it really to protect the people of these regions, only two of which it partially controls, although now, at least on paper, it controls all four of them? Or is it to make these regions a part of Russia to change the calculus of the war? So now when Ukraine/NATO carries out strikes on these regions, it's carrying out strikes on Russia. Is it to change the calculus, or is it a combination of both? I don't know. But again, I think we need to ask these questions and not just accept the narratives coming from either side. And I know that there were over 100 independent international election observers on the ground who reported no violations. So there's that, and that could very well be the case. So maybe all is as it seems, but I believe we need to still question what happened and what the motives are. Because again, if you look at Western corporate media, everything's a sham. If you look at RT, for example, which I looked at a few hours ago, the live news, everything went perfectly. All is right. Everybody they interview is thankful to now be a part of Russia. You never get to hear from somebody who doesn't want to be a part of Russia. But maybe that picture's accurate. I don't know. I'm not there. But
It's almost too good to be true, really. If you get me, it's like a super sugar coated version. Because you expect some dissension. I mean, like, no matter what your position is, even if you're in a hardcore area, we all want to go this way. You'll always get someone that doesn't. But as you say, it's hard to find that person on those interviews, even from the Russian side of things. And the flip side of the coin is from the Western side. I mean, there was Vanessa Bailey was reporting on this. She's been jumped on by, I think it's an MEP, a member of the European Parliament, calling for her to be struck off and deplatformed because of her reporting about these elections. You know, it doesn't really matter what side you come at it from. Somebody will be out there gunning for you, saying you're painting the wrong picture. And as you say rightly, we need to question everything, no matter which side of the fence it's coming from, whether it be from RT News or whether it be from CNN or Fox or any mainstream media outlet, because there's just so many moves being played at the minute. It's getting hard to keep up with all the skullduggery.
Sure. All that said, if the majority of the people in those four regions want to be a part of Russia, then I respect that. I respect their choices in service of self-determination. All I'm saying is that from where I'm situated, I can fully believe one side or fully believe another side, but that wouldn't be responsible of me. I don't feel like I'd be doing my due diligence if that's the way I came at it. So I've been questioning with regard to the referenda, I've been questioning all of it from the get-go. But again, if this is the will of the people there and the will of the people has been done, then I respect and support that. But when we have governments involved heavily in this, as they are from both sides, in inverted commas, if I can put it that way, there's a lot to be distrustful of, or there suspicious or to question.
Let me ask you another question in relation to this, these four areas, okay? And then when we take our break, when we come back, I want to look at the sham Zelensky application to join NATO, where he got a little pen and his two big goons, and he stood there in his khaki outfit and he signed with a piece of paper, and then it's been rejected. Even Kissinger's jumped in and said, no, do not accept this application. I want to cover that when we come back. But on this topic that we're talking about at the minute, if the Western media are to be believed, Putin wants to take over all of Ukraine, and then he'll march west. He wants Poland, and he wants this, and he wants that. In terms of this referendum, or the referenda that happened with these four areas, is that if that goes ahead and they're assumed into the Russian state, is that it? Will Putin be happy with that? Or can we expect more of these referenda coming? Or will he just let it be? Will he just say, well, this is what I wanted. This is what the people of those areas wanted. Let's just move forward. Get the hell out of our land. Leave these people alone. Stop making this a hot conflict. Can we expect them to draw the line at those four areas, really, is what I'm saying? Or can we expect them to encroach ever further west, like NATO have done ever further east?
Well, based on his own words of late, that's it. This is what's happened is it, and Russia has no plans of taking any more or taking in any more, if I can put it that way. And the accession of these regions to Russia is essentially said and done. They are now officially a part of Russia. And to paraphrase Putin, he said, it's now up to Ukraine and its NATO backers to come to the negotiating table. We will negotiate, but we're not going to make the first move. And as far as these four regions go, their new status is non-negotiable. So to Putin and the Russian state, the deal is done with these four regions. They're now officially a part of Russia, And nothing has been said with regard to taking in or taking, depending on your perspective, more of Ukraine. But given what's happened with Nord Stream, given a lot of other very questionable elements to this war, I don't think we're anywhere close to seeing the end of this war.
Yeah, I agree. And it's sad, but it should be a line drawn under it with these events. But of course, you know, and there's a lot of people.
For example, if I can just say real quickly, the U.S. is preparing right now to give $12 billion more in aid, in inverted commas, to Ukraine. So
yeah,
that suggests, at least from the NATO West side, that this war is going to continue, that there are parties. Yeah,
and Liz Truss has also said, by the way, in part of her inaugural speech and address to the Commons, that she intends to support Ukraine right the way through to the end of 2023 in their war against Putin to the tune of £2.3 billion as well. So a little bit like what you've just said in terms of ongoing support. You know, it's obvious that they're looking at this as going to run until at least the end of next year. There's no stopping of this anytime soon. We've got to take a real quick ad break. When we come back, we'll develop this a little bit further again with Zelensky's theatrics, his stage signing of a scrap of paper. It looked like something that I would jot my notes on here in my office with my little cheap black pen. But yeah, well, let's look at the pantomime. Let's look at the theater when we come back. And the response to Ukraine's application to join NATO. Some people were surprised when they were rejected. Some people thought they would have been accepted. No problem with welcoming arms. We'll break it down when we come back with Mr. Jesse Surowell here on TNT Radio. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
How is that green energy transformation working for you? Energy chaos descends upon the world.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Yahoo Finance is reporting this week that firewood is the new gold in Europe. Prices and theft jump in Europe as Russia's gas cutoff boosts wood demand ahead of winter. 1,000% increase in EU energy prices. The New York Times is reporting that, quote, crippling energy bills are forcing European factories to go dark. Due to the shortages and high cost of energy, manufacturers are furloughing workers and shutting down lines because they can't pay gas and electric charges. Makers of metal, paper, fertilizer, other products that depend on gas and electricity are now being shuttered in Europe. Half of Europe's aluminum and zinc production taken offline. But don't worry, I'm sure China and India will be able to fill this manufacturing void. This, my friends, is the Great Reset in action. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again. Then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Back to the phones. Hello, I hate your guts.
I hate you too.
What's your name?
Spit.
All right. I hate society.
TNT.
Yeah, TNT, you can connect with us, by the way. We have email addresses. I even have my own dedicated TNT email address, rickmunn@tntradio.live. Please, avail of it. Contact me. Always interested to read the dark and evil and twisted thoughts of some of your minds out there and the lovely thoughts of some other people's and the somehow neutral thoughts of yet a third category of people. Send me your thoughts, send me your ideas, send me your feedback. I do get a look at those and I do respond to some of them. Some of them I report to the local police because, quite frankly, they're disturbing. But anyway, that's another topic of discussion for another time. Jesse, as we round up the show here today, Zelensky, I didn't realize how short he was. I thought I was a short ass until I saw him signing his little piece of paper flanked by two goons. either they were massive giants of 7 feet tall, or they were just normal sized humans and Zelensky's a midget. What did you make of that little ceremony that was put on for the benefit of the world's press? What's going on with Zelensky? What's he up to?
Well, it certainly categorizes as theater, and why it had to be done outside, I don't know, but I would like to know. And yes, the image of him flanked by two seemingly enormous bouncer-like men is comical, among other things. And getting back to the theater aspect of it, that it was done immediately on the heels of the results of the referenda being announced, obviously synced with the announcement of those results in a tit for tat sort of way. So Stoltenberg responded and said essentially what NATO has been saying for quite some time now, that we'll consider it. We're still considering Ukraine's joining NATO, but probably not going to happen anytime soon. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the message of his statements. So it's a gesture, a theatrical gesture, of course, on the part of Zelensky. I don't think that it's going to materialize into Ukraine joining NATO, because for NATO in the West, that would change the calculus of the war on their end. They would have to treat Ukraine differently than they have so far, and so would the rest of the NATO members, if we think about Article 5 of NATO's charter. That would mean that all other 30 or so countries would have to come to the defense of Ukraine. And I don't think NATO and the West, which are essentially the same at this point and have been for quite some time, I don't think they're ready or willing to take that step. So there's that theater aspect to it, but there's also another theater aspect that I think is important to highlight. And it's, again, this idea that Russia is standing up to globalism and providing an alternative to Western hegemony, to the unipolar order. Just one example of that. Well, two examples, but one that I just learned about an hour ago, because the journalist, independent journalist, Riley Wagaman posted a piece on his Substack about this, that all 300,000 of the reservists whom Russia is mobilizing have to submit to a COVID-19 injection. And all 300,000. And this goes back to a decree that was signed in June of last year with regard to military personnel, mandatory injection, COVID-19 injection. So that's underway right now. And everybody should be questioning, if Russia is supposedly standing up to globalism, why is it still going along with one of the key and one of the most evil aspects of the globalist agenda we've seen rolled out over the past 2.5 years? Anybody caught deserting or trying to evade mobilization can face up to 10 years in prison. So by extension, if you refuse to submit to an injection, you could face up to 10 years in prison. So this is, in essence, as Riley has written in his Substack piece, this is the most authoritarian injection decree we've seen in the past 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. If you don't submit to it, you can face up to 10 years in prison. We haven't seen anything to that degree yet, but that should be pointed out. That's very important, especially because Russia is not only using its unproven adenovirus vector injection, which produces the same spike protein that the mRNA injections produce. Russia is now working on two versions of its own mRNA injection. Why is that? Mm. What's the plan with regard to that? What's the agenda? We should be asking that question and put aside any sort of hopes we've pinned on Russia with regard to standing down globalism. Yeah. On top of that, I want to add that Sweden on Friday announced that it is going to resume exporting weapons to Turkey. And this was arranged between Sweden and Turkey so that Sweden can eventually join NATO and Turkey will stand down on opposing that. At the same time, Russia is also selling weapons to Turkey in the form of its S-400 missile defense system. Mm-hmm. In August, the second provision of those missile defense systems began. Now, Turkey's a NATO country. So mm-hmm. you have Sweden, which is looking to join NATO and probably will relatively soon, now resuming arms sales to Turkey, a NATO country. And you have Russia, which we're told ad nauseum is fighting NATO and the West, selling weaponry to Turkey, a NATO country. Uh-huh. That needs to be questioned. And that gives a whole other sense of theater to what's going on. So there's plenty of theater, plenty of theatrics coming from Ukraine, from NATO, and the West, but there are plenty of theatrics, and I don't say theatrics lightly because they have dangerous, very dangerous implications and consequences coming from Russia as well. And we need to, at the very least, seriously question what is going on here and what we're being told, because in the end, there are no good guys when it comes to these mm-hmm. state actors.
Two things, just as we come to the end of the show here, two things I want to ask you about, or one thought and one thing I want to ask you about. The 300K people that are being conscripted and told that if you don't get this COVID-19 shot, you could do 10 years in prison. It's an offense. Are you aware if that has been the case with the Russian military in general up to this point? Have the existing Russian military been mandated the jab the way, for example, the American Armed Forces have or the National Guard have, or is it just applicable to these 300K? And lastly, the plumb line, I think, for every, if you want to really measure who someone is on the globalist scale, the plumb line is the support of the mandatory injections or vaccine mandate. So I don't care who you are or who you support, if they are backing mandating these jabs with the progressive amount of evidence that's being brought out to show that they are very destructive and not necessary, is that not the plumb line by which we should begin to measure everyone, at least as a starting point going forward, just in a nutshell?
I certainly think it is. And this 10-year penalty, which again applies to trying to evade the mobilization. Mm-hmm. That extends, though, of course, to the injection, because if you refuse the injection, you yeah. are, by extension, trying to evade mobilization. Whether yeah. that's yeah. your intent or not, you could just not want this injection, as mm-hmm. anybody in the world, I would say that should be your position. But you could end up serving 10 years in prison for that. Now, with regard to the mandate for military personnel, the injection has been mandated for all of them since June of last year, but the 10-year prison sentence is a recent development applying to the mobilization of the 300,000. So I don't know what the penalty has been up until just recently, but it's now effectively a 10-year or potential 10-year prison sentence for refusing, not wanting to submit yourself to this untested and deadly genetically modified injection.
Well, it's a sobering thought. And like I said, I think the plumb line has to be whether or not these jobs are mandated. And of course, in this case, if you don't do it, you get 10 years. Not even that you're kicked out of the army, you get potentially 10 years in some Siberian prison, which I've seen some documentaries out there. It's not the sort of place you want to spend 10 years of your life, believe me. Jesse, we're up to time, unfortunately. It's really good to talk to you again today. It's been a blast having you on. Check out Jesse later on today on Perspective, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. UK time. Do your mathematics for Australia, rest of the world. Check him out on his back catalogue on tntradio.live. I'm Rick Munn. This was Locked and Loaded. It's been a blast. I'll be back again tomorrow, hopefully. Stay tuned for more magic here on TNT Radio.